Okay. Well, it's great to be back. I know that speakers are shuttling in like every week, and you're getting different speakers every week. Hopefully, there's a running theme of messages that you're hearing that's really fitting and appropriate and timely. I'm really hoping that today's message on how to give feedback and how to receive feedback will be very helpful for our marriages, our church, and maybe even our companies that we work for. Feedback is one of those things that's, when someone gives it to you well, right, you can hear it, right? But then it could be given to you poorly, so it's, we can get defensive and we can't hear some things. But I would go as far as to say that, we are one feedback away from transforming our lives. Or to put it another way, one coaching tip away from transforming our lives, or maybe even our marriages and our workplaces. Jesus or the Bible talks about that as speaking truth in love. And Ephesians 4:15, which I'm going to read in a little bit, talks about how speaking the truth in love is literally, if not the best way, or one of the best ways to help someone grow into maturity. And we're going to see that in a little bit, and I just so appreciate that, because, feedback, giving it and receiving it is hard, right? Because it's like, oh, it's kind of cringy, especially if it's personal. And yet, the Bible's so clear about how feedback, if done in love, can really help us grow. In New York Times bestseller book, Thanks for the Feedback by Douglas Stone and Sheila Heen, they say this: feedback includes any information we get about ourselves. In the broadest sense, it's how we learn about ourselves from our experiences and from other people. It's how we learn from life. It's our annual performance review. It's what our children write on our birthday cards. It's the local critic's review of our business. But feedback also includes the way your son's eyes light up when he spots you in the audience, and the way your friend secretly slips off the sweater you knitted her the minute she thinks you're out of view. It's the steady renewal of services by a longtime client. It's the lecture you get from the cop on the side of the road. It's what your bum knee is trying to tell you about your diminishing springiness, and the confusing mix of affection and disdain you get from your 15-year-old. So feedback is not just what gets ranked, it's what gets thanked, commented on, invited back or dropped. Feedback can be formal or informal, direct or implicit. It can be blunt or hidden, totally obvious, or so subtle that you're not sure what it is. Like that comment your spouse made yesterday: I don't like the way those pants look on you. What do you mean? You don't like the way these pants look on me? Is there something wrong with this particular pair of pants? Or is that passive-aggressive reference to the weight I've put on? Another dig about how I'm living in the past or can't dress myself, even as an adult. Are you trying to help me look nice for the party? Or is this your way of easing into asking for a divorce? Oh, you think I'm overreacting. There's great feedback that we can receive and do something about that. And then there's inappropriate feedback, unsolicited feedback. Every 2 weeks, I kid you not, someone will spot me at a restaurant or a public place and say, "Man, you look just like Jackie Chan." And I'm like, "Whoa, what the? Dude, this is like 2023. You can't talk like that." This is every 2 weeks. So I'm driving up to Northern Cal 2 weeks ago, and I do a pit stop just by myself because we had a ministry assignment up there. And somewhere in Central California, I decided to stop by for lunch at Carl Jr.'s. I'm eating by myself, just by myself. I'm not even looking down because I don't want to make eye contact with anybody that I might know. I just want to eat. So I'm looking down. I'm eating my burger, and I noticed this fella just walking and looking at me in this corner of my eye. And he looks at me, goes, "Jackie Chan or Jet Li, which one do you get most of?" I'm like, "What the? what is wrong with these people? That's called unsolicited feedback. I don't need more of this. But there is a way to give good feedback, and Jesus models this for us. And I want to take a look at this passage where Jesus is actually trying to restore his top lieutenant. This is Peter at the end of 3 years. He's messed up a lot. He betrayed Christ. But Jesus is going to bring him back. And the way he brings him back, the way he restores him by giving him some great feedback is really worthy of modeling. So that when you are giving feedback to, you know, your spouse or kids or people that you work with, you know, we could take a page out of the way that Jesus would do that. Okay? So let's go ahead and jump right into, let's see the way that Jesus gives great feedback. So when you look at Ephesians 4:15, this is a very well-known passage, but take a look at this. Instead, speaking the truth in love, right? If you speak the truth in love, right, we will grow to become in every respect the mature body of him who is the head. So see the intimate connection between sharing feedback in love because you love them and maturity. It's one of the best ways to help someone grow spiritually. Okay, so what do we see in this passage that's really helpful? So the first thing I want to go ahead, next one, that we get from this passage is when you're providing feedback, particularly what happens here, it's okay to challenge someone's loyalty to God. That sometimes feels like kind of a no-fly zone. Oh, no, hey, you know, it's that between them and God. Man, don't go there. But Jesus actually goes there. He says this, when they had finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? Who are these? If we read the context, right, and what goes before, Peter has just come back from fishing. He was frustrated because he wasn't catching enough fish, and Jesus says, hey, put the net over here. And he ends up catching like 153 fish, pretty large number. And as he comes in, and you know, they've had breakfast, Jesus is now kind of like coaching him a little bit back into, you know, where he needs to be as a follower of Christ. And he said, hey, do you love me more than these? Meaning the fish that he caught, meaning his work. Look, I need you, like, I'm sending you out to make disciples of all nations, but I need you to be a certain character. I can't have you worshiping me and something else. Like, when I send you out, like, I want everybody to see how much you worship God, but if you're also worshiping your work, finding your value in the work that you do, it's gonna be a tainted direction, and I don't want you going that direction. And so he's challenging, he's like, look, do you love me more than these? That's great feedback. You know, it's okay, husbands and wives, say, hey, how are you doing with God? How are you doing spiritually? It's just a question, but it's also a good challenge to say, okay, where are your loyalties? Because we're both in it to win it, but I sense like maybe I'm not sure about your loyalty. So if we want to give great feedback, it's entirely okay to challenge their loyalty. Now, these are just principles I want to share with you, and then I want to get into the application meat a little bit later if you go to the next one. Great feedback steers us back to purpose. Yes, Lord, he said, you know that I love you. Jesus said, feed my lambs. Again, Jesus said, Simon, son of John, do you love me? He answered, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Jesus said, take care of my sheep. The third time he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? So three times Jesus asked Peter, do you love me? Three times he says, yes. And three times Jesus acknowledged, okay, you know, now that I know, okay, now that you've acknowledged your loyalty to me, supreme loyalty to me, apart from other loyalties, now go do what I've been training you for. Go do what I've been developing you for, to be a shepherd, to a caregiver, someone who feeds into others, who pours into others. In other words, that was the whole purpose of the 3 years of discipleship. That it wasn't just that they'd be like 12 great students kind of following Jesus, la-di-la-di-la. It's like, no, he's developing us. He's pouring into us so that we can pour into others. He is actually raising us up to be shepherds so that we can feed other people spiritually. Great feedback always steers people back to purpose. Now, how do we know that this is actually true? There's so many purposes in life, so many things that, you know, your family could be about, so many things that your company could be about, so many things that your neighborhood could be about. Well, this is the purpose of our lives? To shepherd other people? To make disciples of all nations? Yeah. I mean, it seems like the three-year training actually is all emptying out into this. The whole time, the end game was that each of the 12 disciples would become a shepherd so that they could reach the world. So why else would he say, well, then feed my lambs, take care of my sheep? Three times. It's pretty clear that the feedback that Jesus is giving to Peter is like, look, this was always the end game. All the training, all the mistakes that you made and we corrected, the whole purpose of all of that is so that you could be a great shepherd to people. Now, it so happens that Peter actually writes two books in the Bible, 1 Peter, 2 Peter. In 1 Peter 5, he addresses elders as, hey, as a fellow elder, I want to encourage you to keep shepherding people. Love people, not for personal gain, but because you care. Because shepherding is the primary role of the elder. It's the highest position in the church. In fact, a pastor is an elder. So when you put people on the elder board, they should not be primarily business people who make a lot of money. They should not be primarily physicians who make a lot of money, which is often the case when they end up on the elder board. No, they should be the most caring people in the church. That's the highest position in the church. All of the training of Christianity empties out into this role, to shepherd others, to love people. In fact, this was so important. This was so important. Jesus, when he quotes that famous verse that we hear a lot, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. So ask the Lord of the harvest to send out workers. You know, if you read that verse in context, what you see preceding that verse is Jesus' observation of the crowd and how he has some compassion and love. He goes, man, like I'm looking at the crowd, the sheep. They're like a sheep without a shepherd. They're like harassed and helpless. They're like a sheep without a shepherd. And he tells the disciples, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Who is the harvest? The sheep that don't know God. Who are the workers? The disciples. And Jesus is like, no, we're going to raise up workers so that we can feed sheep. And when you get a chance, read Ezekiel 34 slowly. It's God's rebuke against Israel for not shepherding well. Now, that's how important shepherding is. And Jesus and, well, God are often referred to as the great shepherd, right? So this was always the end game. Great feedback steers all of us back to purpose. Great feedback is often painful. This is the one that's, Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him the third time, do you love me? He said, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. Jesus said, feed my sheep. There's a third time. Why was Peter hurt? Peter was hurt because it was the third time that Jesus was asking to remind him about his three betrayals. So in other words, when you give feedback to people, you know what? Don't twinkle toe around and be all kind of nice. Sometimes it's good to point to someone and say, look, you know, this is going to hurt a little bit, but I just want to make sure, Peter, right? The last time you were this zealous about supporting me, you threw me under the bus. You promised that you'd like lay your life down and, you know, you'd never leave me. You'd be at my side. But the last time I really needed you, you threw me on the bus. You betrayed me. I just want to know, is this the same kind of passion or are you over that? Where's your loyalty right now? And so Peter or Jesus was reminding Peter about his failings, the three failings. And that's okay, by the way. I actually think this is what great coaches do. Like, really get on your case, and this is going to hurt a little bit. But you know what? My thinking is I want you to be better. And you're going to be better, Peter. But I just want to make sure. The last time you were this zealous, you threw me under the bus. How is it now? And Peter's like, man, I'm on. I'm back. Right? So it's okay to say things that can actually be a little painful. Now, here's what I'd like you to do, just in the confines and comforts of where you are. I'd like you to share it with each other. What's the best feedback that you've ever received and why? Usually great feedback changes us, right? So I want you to share that with your, it could be your spouse, it could be the person next to you. And we're just going to do this for 5 minutes because I think it's important that you affirm that, you know what, feedback is important. There are times in my life I got great feedback and it made a difference. So I'm going to give you 5 minutes. Yeah, answering this question to each other. Okay, what's the best feedback you've ever received? Okay, go ahead, 5 minutes. Yeah, please make sure you're both sharing, because I think it's important to share the feedback that you've ever had that was good. All right. Feedback usually falls into three categories. It could be an appreciation, like when you get feedback about something good that you did. It could be an appreciation. It could be an evaluation, like here's how I think you're doing, right? Like sometimes we get those evaluations when being married. And then some coaching tip, like how to get better, right? So usually they fall into those three categories, which by the way, we're going to emphasize more next week in terms of how to receive that. Anybody comfortable sharing the best feedback that they've ever received and why it was really good? Just real quick. I mean, if it's real personal, don't share it. But if it's something that, it was the best feedback you've received in a long time and it was helpful. Anybody want to share that? Okay. All right. Elgin. I think you smell you're ugly. Is that what your brother said to you? Okay, when did he say that? Eighth grade, okay. All right, so you're saying that was the best feedback you ever got? All right, so showers, colognes, okay. And but then what about the ugliness? That doesn't change just because you can't cover that up, bro. I'm just telling you, you can't cover up that part. But okay. All right, great feedback and why? Great feedback and why? Okay?
I was probably like 20, 22, and one of our friends, she would mess up grammatically and stuff like that. And I was pretty relentless. Like, if I caught it, I was like really hungry. And then one day, it was probably like 4 years later, she mentioned how she was so afraid to talk around me because of that. I mean, technically, she didn't give me feedback, but from that, I realized how harsh my wording was. I learned to be careful how I talk or make fun of people and make sure that they're able to that they know that I'm joking.
Yeah, yeah.
Just to be careful not to be harsh about people.
Yeah, yeah. And it's interesting how that feedback got to you. It was something that she said, but you also read between the lines, and then that you received that as feedback. Okay, you know what? I gotta make some adjustments. Yeah, that's good. One more, and then we'll...
This is kind of one more, because the first one was kind of good. But the best feedback I had early on when we were married was validation. In the time when we argue, how validating feelings.
For you, that she's saying, hey, if you could... Yes, yeah, that's really good. And not just make your point, but Val, that's great. That's a really good one. Good. My first year of marriage, I got one of the best feedback that I think anybody can get. It was kind of said negatively, but it was really good feedback. So after kind of observing the way I live, maybe it was the second year, Helen goes, why can't you fix things? Just like that. I go, what are you talking about? I can fix anything. No. Like, the toilet gets clogged up, and you don't know how to unclog it. The Venetian blinds need dusting, and you don't know how to do that. Like, I need help with the vacuuming, and sometimes the vacuum, goes wacko, and you don't know how to fix it. Like, what's going on? Like, why can't you fix things? So I'm trying to listen. I'm freshly married, right? We did our vows, love, commit to each other, unconditional love. And I'm getting this, unwarranted feedback, but this is her observation. She said, why can't you fix things? So I had to think through, why can't I? So I had to think through, dang it, why can't I fix this stuff? So I went back to my childhood. This is the part where it helped me that I got this feedback. So I'm second of four boys. And if you're an Asian household, particularly Korean Asian household, you're ranked. There's one, two, three, and four. So I was the second of four. I'm one and two. And so when we come home from school, my mom was always like, okay, John and Dave, go upstairs and study. Paul and Mark, go clean the kitchen. Go clean the, carpet in the living room. And it was just kind of, that was our culture, right? Because I was two. I was one and two, right? And there's a real hierarchy in, the way we're treated. So my entire junior high school life, we were like, hey, go upstairs and study. Three and four is like, go downstairs and clean the house. So never learned to do laundry until much later. Never had to clean anything. I just never learned. I mean, I had skills, but I just never learned. I never had to do any of that. So today, my third brother is like a Renaissance guy. He can do anything. And I think he had that early training, being told all the time to go do stuff. My youngest is like that too. But really, my older brother, this is the perennial firstborn, still doesn't really do laundry, still doesn't, he just his wife does everything, right? But here I am, number two, not having any of that background either. And when I hear that, I go, what the, wow, she's right. I don't have that training. But here's the beautiful thing. If you actually take feedback from people that love you, you tend to start thinking about, let me do something about this, right? So now, as this is all happening, and things are breaking down in the house as normal when you live somewhere for long periods of time, the light bulb goes out, the vacuum cleaner needs a new remote or something like that. So one day, our washing machine, right, the rinse cycle motor broke down. So now we can't do laundry. That's what I was thinking, right? So I'm thinking, what do? I called the Maytag guy. I said, hey, can you come over and fix this, the motor in the rinse cycle, right? And he's like, we're going over the phone. And he actually comes over, and he goes, yeah, it's going to cost you $200 to $300. I can replace it, but that's how much it's going to. It's a couple hundred dollars. Now, that's not chump change for, minister's family. I go, what the? It can't be that hard to replace a little motor inside the rinse cycle. So what do? We send him off, right? I said, I'm going to look this up on YouTube. Rinse cycle motor. And sure enough, it has a Maytag model. Sure enough, it has all the steps. I'm looking at this I could do this. So I go back there, unscrew the panel. I see the motor. It's kind of underneath. It's kind of a little bit of work, but I unscrew that thing and I pull it out. And it's like that motor's this big. And I bet if I look this up on Amazon, it would not be $300. So sure enough, I get on Amazon, I match the model number, $24. Boom, I order that bad boy, it comes the next day, and in 2 days, we got a washing machine that works. I said, this is not bad. This is not bad. So what do I start doing? I start fixing everything. I'm doing everything. I'm changing the light bulb. I'm vacuuming. I'm building stuff. I'm building things in my garage, right? I'm like Mr. Fix-It now, right? Like the other day, I took the shower valve handle, right? And I turned it too tightly, so it fell off. So what the, you know? And I'm like looking inside, you know, I just need the little handle. So I ordered the handle and I put it back, but it was fairly sophisticated work that I'm very proud of. But I couldn't do that in year one, but I got great feedback. Why can't you fix things? So I had to do a little like feedback footprint. I had to go back. Why can't I fix things? I was brought up a certain way. I never had to do laundry. I never had to do dishes. I never had to clean the rugs. So I had to learn on the job. But what triggered the learning was the comment, why can't you fix things? Now, I've been married 30 years. That's just one little feedback that I received. There's so much, right? But so have you. Like, you've been told by your spouses and their friends, okay? You've heard feedback. I'm not saying anybody in the room. Hey, you could be a better listener. Hey, I feel like you love work more than you love me. All right? It's like, hey, you know, you could spend more time with the kids. We've got feedback all over the place. But do we actually take it in and actually use it to be more responsible, right? That's where we're headed, okay? So today we're going to talk about you being the giver of the feedback. Like, how do I give good feedback for the benefit of that person? That's today. Next week, we're going to talk about, well, how do I receive that feedback? Because of the two, by the way, the giver of the feedback and the receiver of the feedback, if you want to like put an emphasis on which is more important, it's actually the one who receives it. Like, you have 100% control over if you want to take that feedback or not. If you're the giver of the feedback, you could be the most eloquent, loving, truthful feedback giver. But there's no guarantee that they're going to take it. You see what I'm saying? So of the two talks, actually, next week's talk is actually more important, so you don't really want to miss that. How you receive feedback is actually more important than, you know, you giving feedback, but today's talk is going to be like how to give it well, okay? All right, let's move here. who's the best leader you've ever had? I asked this to a guy who's a Disney executive. He's been there over 20 years, and I said, hey, who's the best leader you've ever had? And he didn't hesitate. He goes, so-and-so, so-and-so, and I said, why? Because, man, he always had my back, and he gave me regular feedback. Very interesting how much of a role that getting feedback plays in your content at work, even at in your marriage, and even at church. I got regular feedback. In his case, it was a little bit off because, I mean, he trusted this guy. I said, can you give me an example of, like, feedback that you got that was really helpful? He goes, well, it's a negative example, but he's so... like, he's a good man, and I know he wouldn't say things just to be mean to me, but this one time, I wasn't prepared for a board meeting. He was running the supervisor was running the meeting, and he's the CPA, you know, finance guy over, I think, the entertainment division, and he missed something, and his boss is like, how come, why don't you know this? You're our CPA, just like that, publicly, which I wouldn't recommend. But then he immediately said he was sorry, right? And you know, my friend was essentially saying, like, look, apart from that, the way he did it, this guy gives me feedback all the time, so I know where I stand. I know exactly where I stand. I feel appreciated. I don't have any doubts about him looking out for me, right? So that's why feedback is so very important. Effective feedback is a way of giving input to help someone become the best version of themselves. In the Christian sense, is Jesus. You can't get any better than Jesus. So how do we get there? It's when somebody gives you feedback about it. It's insight or suggestion that contributes to a desired outcome, right? You can know that in the business world. It's information about reactions to a product, a person's performance or task, which is used as a basis for improvement, right? That's why that's, you know, really good feedback. You know, why is effective feedback important? It inspires change. If you lived solo for for the rest of the, let's say, for the next, I don't know, 5 years, right? You're not in community. You don't care enough about others to be in community. They don't care about you. Guess what? You are not going to receive any feedback. And guess what? You're not going to grow. So to live in isolation without feedback is to say, you know what? I don't care if I grow or not. So we need that to actually grow. We need this feedback. Even in the workforce, 65% of employees would like more feedback. 58%, almost 60% of managers think they're giving enough feedback. That's usually kids, by the way. Usually the person that's in a position of power, they feel like, oh no, we're already giving enough feedback. The people that are the direct reports or maybe less influential positions always feel like they're not getting enough. Almost 40% of employees don't feel appreciated because they don't get enough feedback. 43% of highly engaged employees receive feedback at least once a week. So think about that for a moment. When's the last time you got feedback from your spouse? When's the last time that you got feedback from your company or the people in charge, right? That feedback is so... When's the last time that you got feedback from people in your church about your leadership and how you come across? It might have been... Guess what? When you don't get that feedback, what do? You fill in the blank with your assumptions about, oh, I'm doing great, doing really well, don't need to change, it's cool. Well, the truth is the people around you don't love you enough to give you feedback. That's the truth. Or they're afraid because they see the way you react for previous feedback. Okay, and we'll talk about how to receive feedback later. Okay, why is effective feedback important? It helps us to know how we're doing, right, and not doing, and it changes everything, okay, which is really what we've been saying. Okay, so now let's get into the how part. How do we give great feedback? This week is about how to give feedback. Next week is how to receive it. The first I'd recommend, according to the scripture, is to do it privately, just between the two of you. Like public constructive criticism is hardly ever helpful, even if you're doing it in a loving way. So privately is what the Bible suggests, okay? Matthew 18:15 says, if your brother or sister sins, go and point out their fault. Just between the two of you. This is how church discipline is supposed to be done. If they listen to you, you have won them over. The couple pieces to this that's really significant. It says, if they listen to you, you have won them over. So in other words, the purpose of great feedback is restoration. If thinking about what you feel like you need to say to somebody, like you're not really thinking restoration, you just want to blow them out of the water, you probably shouldn't be giving that feedback. Because that's not the goal of feedback. The goal is to restore that person. You want to kind of bring them back. You want to help them become more like Jesus. But if you're just mad and you're bitter and you're just angry and you go, man, I got some good feedback for you, it's like, that's probably not the best time to give feedback. Okay? So it's private. You know, let's make sure it's private and that you have actually restoration in mind. Okay, second, I really like this one because I think this is the one that really helps the most. And I, by the way, I think this is exactly how Jesus did it with Peter. Be absolutely candid and absolutely respectful. Both, right? Don't pull any punches. Be candid. But at the same time, you know, find ways to communicate how much you value who they are. Be respectful. But because check this out. Let's say you're really candid, but you're not respectful. They're gonna be hurt. They're going to think you're a mean jerk. Wow. Well, I thought we were friends. But what if you're really respectful, but you're not candid? It's like, oh, they don't really mean it. It's a little light, right? Like, they're very respectful, but, oh, yeah, that other thing that you want me to work on, oh, they don't really mean it. So that's why you need both, okay? What's an example of that? There's a company whose CEO is, you know, one of the best in the country. And, the staff over time started to notice, though, that he would come to meetings late, and when he got to the meetings, he wasn't always prepared, right? And this very staff who signed up to be part of the company because of his leadership started to get concerned. And they're like, well, how do we like tell him that, yeah, we love and respect him, but boy, like I don't feel like he's taking our meeting seriously. He's often late, and he's not prepared. And so they started to look at each other and say, who would be the best to communicate this feedback, right? And sure enough, they had this one person who just felt like, oh, man, they'd be the best because they knew that they would be absolutely candid and absolutely respectful. So they chose that person, and he was glad to do it, set up a private meeting with the CEO, right, and leader, and this is what he said. He said, man, we are at this company because of your leadership. Like, we know the previous companies that you work for, that you started, and it was led so well. We read about your leadership. We said, man, we want to work for that guy. So we are here because of your leadership. There's nobody we'd rather work for. But we have noticed recently that you've been coming to meetings late. And when you're there, you're not really prepared. We are starting to feel like you don't care as much about us and the company. So could we go back to, you know, the leader that you are? Because they say, because as far as leadership, we don't want to work for anybody else. You're the best leader we've ever worked for. You're competent, you're clear, and there's nobody we'd rather work for. Absolutely candid, absolutely respectful. And it's like, oh, that's possible. And I want to encourage everybody in this room, you probably have someone in mind that you'd like to give some feedback to, right? Learning how to be absolutely candid and absolutely respectful is so vitally important because the way you deliver it affects the way they receive it. So the second way that we can give great feedback is, you know, be absolutely candid and absolutely respectful. Here's the third way. Do it with gentleness and restoration in mind. And the verse that comes to mind as I think about that principle is Galatians 6, 1 through 4. Brothers and sisters, if someone is caught in a sin, you who live by the Spirit should restore that person gently. But watch yourselves, or you also may be tempted. Carry each other's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. If anyone thinks they are something when they are not, they deceive themselves. Each one should test their own actions. Now, why would Paul say, but watch yourselves, or you also may be tempted? Tempted of what? Probably of judgment, superiority. I'm better than you, so let me tell you a few things. So Paul is warning us that, hey, when you give feedback, have restoration in mind and do it gently. Or else you're going to come across as this haughty, I know everything, let me tell you a few things about life, and now they're not going to really be able to receive that feedback. This word restore is actually an interesting, good word. It's the Greek word that Paul uses is katartizit. And it literally means to reset bones. So when you reset a bone, you think, oh man, let me just move really gingerly and tenderly. That's the way that you're supposed to give feedback, as if like you're really concerned about resetting something in a loving way. Now, back in high school, I was involved in a wrestling match my junior year. And, you know, I was really just going at it as much as I can. And I shot for a maneuver. And I was really trying to grab my opponent's left leg, but instead I got his kneecap. And so my left finger, right? You know how your fingers only go like this, right? Well, my finger at that day, because I hit the neck, kneecap went like that. So it was like right angle like this. I go, oh my goodness. So it was disjointed, right? So I go to the referee. I go, oh my goodness. Like I'm like this. And he goes like this. He gets in front of me. He grabs my arm, he goes like this, and he yanks it forward. I go, ah, and I scream at the top of my lungs. He's like, what are you doing? Well, I'm just bringing it back where it needs to be. I go, that's not resetting bones properly, by the way. Okay, that's not the way you want to give feedback, okay, the way that he did it. Okay, so it did go back, but it was extremely painful. Okay, but there is a way to do this. We're going to talk about that. When you restore somebody, when you give feedback, you want to do it in a loving, gentle manner. Okay? Okay. All right. Finally, it's just two more. Take out your plank before you remove someone else's plank. Okay? This is actually in the Bible. Matthew 7, 1 through 5. Do not judge, or you too will be judged, for in the same way you judge others, you will be judged. Okay? Verse 3. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, when all the time there is a plank in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take the plank out of your own eye, then you'll see more clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. So two things. The passage doesn't say, don't ever judge, don't ever evaluate. It says, no, before you do that, take the plank out of your own eye, because if you want to say something about their speck. Do you know how you can tell if you're growing spiritually? The way you can tell you're growing spiritually is that you're always seeing planks in your own eyes and specks in the others. When you know you're not growing spiritually, it's the other way around. You see planks everywhere else, and you think you got the speck. The way you know that you're growing spiritually is when you see, it's like, wow, there's a lot of stuff I need to work on. I need so much of the grace. But you know what? These other people, yeah, you know, they got issues too, but they're none as big as mine. Okay? And this is, I think, such a beautiful imagery. Take the plank out of your own eye, then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. Years ago when I gave this message, I wanted the message to be memorable so that people could remember that this is such an important perspective, right? Take the plank out of your own eye before you kind of evaluate someone's specs. So the night before I gave this message on Matthew 7, I went to Home Depot and I bought a plank. I looked at the best plank. Like I said, oh, this is big enough, bro. All right, so I buy the thing, right? And I get up on stage, and I got my plank. I go, hey, we're going to talk about Matthew 7 now. And the point of the message is that you're actually supposed to remove your plank before you kind of work on somebody else's spec. And so I'm here to tell you, here are my planks. So I'm just like going off, right, on all my planks. And the reason I could is that I was about 10, 15 years older than our congregation. So technically when I said, look, I'm actually the biggest sinner in the room, I was not far from the truth because I have had more time to sin. So I was like when I was at GRX, I was 34 to 44. So that would have been like, I would have been like 10, 15 years older than everybody, right? So as I did that, it was a lot easier for people to hear the message because I was like, hey, I'm willing to take my planks. Hear that right here. Could you imagine if you're giving feedback to somebody, your spouse, your kids, if they sensed that you were taking off your plank as you were talking about their spec? Don't you think they would receive that feedback really differently, right? So these four ways, like, can I encourage you to kind of, like, actually take it seriously? Because there's probably the people around you, they're like a couple of feedbacks away from changing. But if you take advantage of that and you give feedback, but you do it the wrong way, it's like, man, like, you are not helping that person grow, right? So the fourth one here is take the plank out of your eye, right, before you deal with a speck. All right. Number five, and this is so important as well, you know, we want to do this with great timing. Ecclesiastes says, a very familiar verse, there is time for everything, a season for every activity under the heavens, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to uproot. Sometimes I feel like, wow, you know, if we do point four, that's the most important. It's like, oh, man. This could be the most important, right? The timing in which that you share the feedback. I mean, even God of the Bible, for goodness sake, like, you know, the wedding at Cana, right? Everyone's like, hey, the water's, you know, the wine's run out. Jesus, like, can you do a miracle? And it's like, hey, my time has not come. Or Mary and Martha are like yelling at Jesus, like, man, if you had been here, our brother wouldn't be dead. And Jesus, like, actually, I kind of intentionally waited, because I needed Lazarus to be dead because I was going to raise him from the dead so that everybody can see that I have that kind of power. So actually, my timing is a little different than yours. So it's all over the Bible. So why not also think through, like, okay, is this really the best time to have this hard conversation with my husband? Is this the best time to have this hard conversation with my kids? You know, in our household, we never have hard conversations before a meal because if you're hungry and you're anxious, things don't go well in our household. So generally, Saturday mid-morning is kind of the designated time for us. It's like, you know, hard conversation time. Whole week of work is done. We slept well, had good breakfast. Okay, we can have a hard conversation. We've got to figure out, okay, how do we time it better? In my last ministry, I was the pastor of the church, but I was also the principal of the school. There was a preschool, an elementary school, and a junior high. I was overseeing. It's crazy. And we were in a season where our budgets were tight, so I had to let someone go, right? And so we had designated a day that we would do that on a Friday to let so-and-so go. Now, it was going to be a hard conversation because she fell into the categories that I could be liable for if we fired them erroneously. She was a woman, she was a person of color, and she was older. So if I don't do this right, she could say, hey, wrongful termination, you know, this is wrong. I've been a veteran here. Why am I being fired? So I had to be very careful. So I just thinking like, okay, we have the green light to do this. We'll just pick a Friday. I was all set to kind of let her go on a Friday. But then I found out that after our meeting, that she was going to go down to L.A. and celebrate her birthday with her daughter. And I just started thinking, oh my goodness, if I do this in 3 or 4 in the afternoon, she's going to be driving 6 hours thinking about the termination. That's going to completely ruin you know, her birthday weekend. So I'm like, I felt like God was saying, look, exercise some wisdom. So we postpone it to Tuesday, right? We're at the meeting privately, right? Because I know I have to let her go. Even before I say anything, she says, you're letting me go, aren't you? I go, wow, how did you know that? The Holy Spirit told me. I've been thinking about this. I knew my time was coming. So what are the next steps? I was so grateful. I was so grateful that God was leading and said, look, the timing of this could be better. Yes, I'm giving you the green light to let this person go, but the time in which that you do this is so important. Why don't you wait? So we did. And that gave her to hear from the Holy Spirit to even initiate and say, look, I know you're going to let me go. Just, you know, I've been thinking about this. It's time. My time is up. So tell me what we need to do. Wow. Right? Praise God. So timing is very, very important. All right. Now, there are times when you set up a meeting with someone, and let's say you've had past hard conversations. You could be the subordinate or the supervisor. There are instances where you need to look at that and say, okay, you know, there's a power differential here. So it's not going to be like equal terms in giving each other feedback. They're going to interpret different. It's funny. I have a friend who's a former missionary but now a senior pastor of a church in the East Coast, and their daughters are like adult daughters, right? And so this is the father saying this to me about how their hard conversation went. And as the kids were getting older, they learned language from the marketplace, like how to communicate. And so, you know, he wanted to have a very hard, honest conversation with his adult daughter. I think she's like in her like mid to late 20s, right? And as he asks for this meeting, his daughter goes, Dad, okay, we can't meet one-on-one. And he's like, why not? You're my daughter. There's a power differential between you and I. You know, you're my father, but you're also my pastor. There's ways that, like, even if I say stuff, you're going to, like, correct me, and you're going to power up. And I don't like feeling like that. So can we have a mediator? Is that mom? Is it another adult? Who knows? But even a 25-year-old can sense that there's a power differential. Okay, this is probably the one time I would not do it privately. Like even as a senior pastor, like I'm just thinking, hey, you know, if we're meeting and you want feedback from me, I'm giving. By the way, this is not performance review. This is all kind of feedback during the course of the one-on-one can happen. But if there is a power differential, like I think it would be wiser to actually bring somebody in from the outside who's more objective, can kind of reframe things, and that's just appropriate, right? So that would be the exception to this whole kind of, you know, share privately. But if there is a power differential, then you really do have to bring in a mediator. All right. So this next part, I'm only going to glance over it and really expand it next week, switching gears to how do you receive feedback. Now, we just went over how to give it, but now we're going to go over how to receive it, and it's the first is to receive it with wisdom. Proverbs 9:8-9 says this: Do not rebuke mockers, or they will hate you. Rebuke the wise, and they will love you. Instruct the wise, and they will be wiser. Teach the righteous, and they will add to their learning. You rebuke, in other words, you rebuke a fool, then they become more foolish. You give feedback to a wise person, they get wiser. You got to decide: Are you going to be the wise person, or you want to be the fool? Because the Bible says that if you live a foolish life and somebody tries to give you feedback about it, like you're going to get more foolish. But if you actually are like discerning and wise and you welcome feedback for growth, then you're going to get even wiser. Okay, so you've got to decide which one are you. Are you the fool or are you the wise person? Second, with humility, right? And this goes without saying, listen and don't interrupt. But the big piece here, which I'm going to expand next week, is this. And I'm going to leave you with this just so that you can think about it, and then we're going to really expand it next week. People can give feedback, but it's so hard to receive feedback without being defensive. There are a lot of responses that we can have with feedback. There are at least three that I know of. Now, you could come up with more. I could tell you that I'm guilty of guilty of the first two, and occasionally I'm good at the third. But here's three ways that most people respond to feedback. Number one, a defensive response, where you start beating them up right? Let's say somebody makes a comment about your driving, you know, they feel, hey, dude, I'm kind of unsafe, like, you know, like, and you start, you know, the person that's saying it to you is just like this, and you're like, I've seen you drive, you know, it's not like I feel safe when you're driving. It's like, wow, whoa, okay, that's a defensive response, right? And you start beating that person up, right? The second is a self-condemning response when someone says, man, dude, like, you're kind of a rocky driver. It's, oh, yeah, you're right. I'm a terrible driver. What was I thinking? You start beating yourself up. But there's a third that is appropriate and fine, which is a non-anxious, non-response. Meaning, like, they're saying something to you, particularly if you're driving, and you're like, ooh, I don't know if that's true or not. So separate yourself maybe 2 or 3 days from the comments in yourself. And then days later, when you can really hear those comments, you can assess and say, let's see here. Am I really a bad driver? You know, the kids tell me that I'm really good. They feel safe around me. And all my friends, they prefer that I be the driver. So you come to the conclusion 2 or 3 days later, it's like, you know, I appreciate the feedback, but it's simply not true. So you can actually go back to that person and thank them for the feedback, right? But say, you know, thanks, but, you know, I think I'm a pretty good driver. Or after 2 or 3 days, you know, thinking about it, when you're, you know, not anxious anymore, and you start to think about all the comments that have been made about your driving from your kids, that it's like they don't feel safe in the back. They're like constantly grabbing, you know, you're thinking about all those images, and your friends, your closest of friends, it's like, hey, dude, do you mind if I drive? It's like, well, now you're thinking, you know what? I think she's right. You can now go back to that person and say, you know what? I didn't even realize, but man, thank you so much for that feedback, because you're right. Like, there are a number of people who have commented on my driving, but I just haven't been able to hear it. Selective listening. So thank you. That's a great feedback, right? Okay, I'm going to pause there, okay, and end it here, because next week we're going to go into, like, okay, you know, why is it when we get certain kind of feedback we get triggered and hurts? It's like, and you get angry, right? Why is it? Is it the actual feedback, or is it because the person that gave you the feedback, right? You see how that can be? Sometimes it's not even, you've had the same feedback from lots of people, but you just cannot hear from this person because there's been past hostility, like you guys don't get along, and when they give you that same feedback the four other people have given you, it's like, you start to trigger, right? So we got to look at how do we overcome that, because there's probably some great feedback that we're hearing that is just being washed away because you were triggering, okay? So you definitely want to come back next week. Okay, we're going to go over how to receive better feedback. I don't know anything about your marriages. I know a little bit about your church, but I'm just going to assume that learning how to receive feedback well without being defensive could be helpful. Yes? Yeah? Okay, so that's what we're going to do next week. Let's go ahead and close. Father, thank you. You are the great feedback giver. We see the way that you gave feedback to Cain when he was about to kill his brother. You told him, sin is crouching at the door, like, you must master this. You told David, after he committed adultery and killed somebody, you told him, look, I would have given you everything, like, why this? Now, the sword will never leave your house. And so you've given feedback to your people, and I know that you're giving feedback to us. Help us to receive your feedback well, even if it comes from people around us, Lord. And so may the truths and the principles that we went over today, how to give great feedback, stick, that they would be helpful, and that when we are in the midst of giving feedback, God, that we would pay attention to the timing and whether or not we're trying to restore the person, and that we could be absolutely candid and absolutely respectful, God. So help us in this area, because we know when we take feedback and receive it well, it could change. It could change us for the better. And that's what we want. We want to be more like you, Jesus. We pray all these things in Christ's name. Amen.